From JetBooks, this is Irish Business Builders, a show about great Irish businesses and the people who built them. Head to jetbooks.ie/resources to pick up our free step-by-step guide on how to automate your bookkeeping.
The number one thing is you have to learn how to delegate. If you don't learn how to delegate, you'll build a business that will tie you up. Commit to it. It is an art, and you have to learn how to do it.
I'm Conor Carney, and that's the voice of Barbara Turley, founder and CEO at The Virtual Hub, a recruiting service providing virtual assistance in the Philippines to businesses all over the world. Barbara started The Virtual Hub only 5 years ago and has already scaled it to 150 staff. That would be impressive for anyone without other responsibilities, but Barbara has managed to do it while living remotely in the French Alps and as a mother of two young children. In this conversation, Barbara talks about the importance of delegation, how she manages her time as a full-time mum and CEO, and how leaving behind a successful career in investment banking was the best thing she ever did. I started out by asking Barbara to walk me through the business of The Virtual Hub.
So The Virtual Hub, we recruit, we train, and then we manage our own virtual assistants, mainly in the digital marketing space. And we help clients all over the world to take all the to-doing involved in digital marketing off their plates and get a virtual assistant to help them really cost effectively so that they can go on then to grow and scale their business. Essentially, that's what we do. So we are based in the Philippines. We have currently 140 staff and growing, although the environment we're in right now in COVID has kind of paused that for a little while, but we're growing again, which is great. There's big demand for digital out there. So we're hoping to, in the next year, to double our numbers of staff.
And how did you start the business? How did it come about?
Essentially, I call this my accidental business. So I started it by accident. I didn't mean to. Most business coaches and platforms out there will tell you that you need to have, you know, a business plan. You need to, you know, have all these bells and whistles before you start a business. But essentially, I was doing business coaching. I was doing some coaching, smaller businesses, mainly in Australia, where I was living at the time. And I was noticing that every business I was coaching, didn't matter what industry they were in, and it didn't matter what they were selling, whether it was online, brick and mortar, you know, product or service, they all essentially had the same problem. It was that if they didn't hire staff, they were never really going to get out of the gates and grow. If they didn't grow, they were never going to be able to afford to hire staff. So they were in this vicious circle of plateauing, basically, not really getting anywhere and running themselves into the ground. So the only way really to solve this problem for the clients I was coaching was to look at the Philippines and say, well, look, I'll help you to get some VAs in the Philippines, and then we'll get some systems and processes in for them. And once we get the stuff off your plate, then we can start to work on strategy again. And the idea was that I was just doing it as a, I wasn't doing it as a business. I was doing it so that I could actually help these clients to work more on strategy and build their businesses. And before I knew it, I was getting phone calls, random phone calls from, you know, friends of clients, not asking me for business coaching, but desperate to get one of these VAs. And I thought to myself, but like, you can just go on Upwork or, you know, Freelancer and get a VA. So why would you want me to do it for you? And I rapidly discovered that a lot of people, first of all, just didn't have time. They didn't believe they had, they weren't confident enough in their own expertise of this area to go and do it themselves. So they were happy to sort of pay someone else to do it. So I did it for a few more people. And then I thought to myself, gee, I wonder, is there a business in this? And literally overnight, within the space of about a month, I had pivoted out of doing any business coaching. And The Virtual Hub, in its first iteration, which was a bit messy, was born. We had no website, no name, nothing. It was just an offer that I put out. I actually did a webinar to a small list of, you know, leads that I had at the time, offering to help people to get this right and to hire VAs for them. And overnight, it was born out of nothing, to be totally honest.
You were obviously in a position at that point whereby you kind of maybe wanted to start a bigger business or a more scalable business from going from business coaching. I'm interested to hear how you went from the corporate job that you had before and being quite comfortable there to moving into business coaching and entrepreneurship in the first place.
I mean, when I left corporate, I spent 15 years in corporate in the whole investment banking arena. Started out my career similar to where you got your start in Davy Stockbrokers in Dublin, and went on to forge a career in Sydney, Australia, where I moved to in the trading floors, equity trading I was in. My appetite was always there for thinking about doing my own thing, mainly because I knew that I didn't want to be in corporate my whole life. I did love it in my 20s. But I wanted to be a mum and I didn't want to be a corporate mum. That was a big thing in the back of my head. But I didn't really know how to make that transition. And I did have one massive failed attempt, I'll be honest, in my early 30s at doing this. I left my career. I decided, right, that's it. I resigned. I had a bit of savings. So I was, you know, all happy with myself. I took some time off, went and did a ski season in New Zealand. I traveled around Australia, did all the cool things. And then, boom, the last financial crisis hit right at the end of that and kind of gave me a kick in the teeth, to be honest, because at that point I hadn't really thought about, you know, what business I was going to launch or, you know, I just hadn't thought it through at all. And not only that, but I had taken a year out and I had pretty much, you know, spent a lot of savings that I had and just didn't think ahead at all. So I realized that I was going to have to go back to corporate and sort of figure this thing out and maybe ride out the storm. But I couldn't get a job. I could not. That year after, I mean, you remember the last financial crisis in 2008. I mean, there were no jobs going. I even managed to get some interviews. And when I finally realized that the whole thing was falling apart, I had done about four interviews with Lehman Brothers in Sydney just before they collapsed. So I was like, okay, failure.
They were still hiring, obviously, at that stage. You know, they obviously didn't know.
They knew what they were doing. Yeah. I don't think anyone knew what was going on, but they collapsed about a month later. And I remember just thinking, I mean, quite honestly, I was emotionally, financially, and mentally broken by that stage, going, what am I going to do? And it sort of forced me to think outside the box, right? And somebody said to me in Sydney, a friend of mine, she said, look, there's a colleague of mine is going on maternity leave. You know, she's a business development manager, a key account manager in Deutsche Asset Management. And her job is that she goes around the country in Australia and she speaks to financial advisors and tries to sell managed funds, basically. And I was like, right, I've no experience in that. Don't know anything about this industry. Never did sales before, but I'll give it a crack. And thankfully, I met the CEO. He was attracted to my experience in the investment markets because he said to me, look, I know you've no experience in this, but your experience would be quite valuable right now to talk to financial advisors about what's actually going on. So I was kind of going to be able to step in and have pretty deep conversations about the financial markets. Sure. So I decided to do it and I actually really enjoyed it. And it led me on an amazing journey to being in the right place at the right time, when about 6 months after that, the CEO and a couple of very clever people that I was working with at the time, there was an opportunity that presented to do a management buyout of that business from Deutsche Asset Management in Australia. I was asked, was I keen to hop on the coattails of that? I said yes, and I basically did sweat equity for a couple of years there and managed to take a fairly decent stake in that company. And it went on to grow massively thereafter. But I learned a lot about entrepreneurship through that experience. And it whetted my appetite to do my own thing one day again, when I healed from the wound of making a mess of it before. So I hope that gives you a sort of sense of like the journey is never linear.
When you actually went to start your own business after the management buyout and the and working through the sweat equity, did you find that you had learned skills that helped you when starting the business?
Yes. Look, I had learned a couple of very valuable skills during that time. I mean, it was hell, right? The first part of it was pretty hellish because I had, you know, sort of sold my soul and my financial position and everything. So in order to pull it off, I had to pare my entire life back. I mean, you know, I had no car at one stage and I committed to it all in. I was all in this whole thing. And then after the first couple of years, of course, you know, earnings happened again. And my husband today, boyfriend at the time, very kindly sort of supported me. He was the one supporting me through that whole experience. But I learned a few things. I learned how to hustle quite hard. I learned the power of, you know, sort of taking the pain early on in order for a bigger vision to happen later. And I learned a lot from the CEO in particular. I learned a massive amount from him about, you know, how these great companies get built, how to keep going, but also how to sell. I learned how to sell during that time and how to manage relationships with pretty key. I was in a sales role. So that taught me a lot of key things that really stood to me later when I came to do my own thing. But look, my first business that I did after leaving corporate failed, right? Now, now would it have got on to be successful? Possibly, but the first iteration of it failed. And that was Energize Wealth, which I had started. I had this vision around teaching women how to be more, you know, into the money game and wealth creation and stuff like that. But yeah, that one didn't go that well. And the reason the business coaching thing happened was because I tried to launch an online program that kind of flopped. And a few people were keen to have me consult to them. So I took it as a sort of a stopgap measure. I was never really intending to be a business coach. I always wanted to build a more scalable online type business.
Sure.
So yeah, from the ashes of that, I mean, the Virtual Hub was born, really.
What was it, do you think, that caused the first business to fail? Was it that you hadn't done the business coaching first to build the key relationships, or was it something else? Was it that you hadn't figured out online marketing or something like that?
Two things. I can tell you the two things that I did wrong. And look, I think people told me this prior as well, but you sort of don't learn the lesson until you learn it yourself. Key thing number one, I spent way too long, you know, agonizing about the logo, the colors, the photo shoots, the website, all the stuff that, matters, you know, branding. Of course it matters. But not in the early stages of a business, you know, product to market fit and sales matter more than these things. So when I came to do the Virtual Hub, you'll remember I said I didn't have a business plan. We had no website. We had nothing. It was just, hey, do you want to help me get a VA for you? It was an offer. So that was key point number one. I spent way too long and way too much money on that stuff and on building that first online program. The other key thing was that the online program that I put out there, I did a lot of market research. I did all the things that you're supposed to do before you launch. So I invested heavily in, you know, I got a group of women together. I asked them their pain points, all the stuff that you're supposed to do, did all that right. Except the bit I missed was that I found a problem that people wanted to solve, right? Which is the key thing in a startup. But the next iteration of that is you need to find a problem that people are willing to pay money to solve today and not at some time in the future. So the key thing there with the program I launched, women told me they loved it. They wanted me to launch it. But when it came to buying it, I realized that it was a problem they wanted to solve in the future. It's kind of like retirement. It was something they saw in their future and they weren't willing to put money behind it today. So could I have iterated out of that and I you know, launched a different type of program? Yes. And I could have made Energize Wealth successful. In your first business failure, there's a lot of emotion that goes with that. And I felt like a failure. I had come out of corporate. Like there was a whole pile of gunk that came up for me.
Yeah.
And I spent about 3 months just really in a sort of a depressive state and doing a bit of business coaching just for the income. But from that, you know, look, from that, I saw the problem people needed to solve today, which was I'm overwhelmed in my business. I don't know how to get help. I don't know how to delegate. And from that, the Virtual Hub was born. So two key lessons.
You started the Virtual Hub 5 years ago, is it now?
About five, yeah. I think it's coming up to six now, yeah.
It's been a huge success, you know, especially if you think about how down you were after your first business not really taking off. You've had crazy success with this business. I'd be interested to hear about maybe what contributed to that and the kind of early success of the business.
Because I hadn't envisioned this business myself, I hadn't come up with this really. It was the market that came to me and told me that they wanted to pay me to do it, right? So that's a key difference, right? So I didn't become wedded to my vision. And I wasn't, like in Energize Wealth, I had this whole vision for how I thought it should be. Whereas in this business, it was a hustle thing where the market was telling me something and I just was trying to, I couldn't build it fast enough for what the market wanted. So the key successor, I think, was that I learned that because I didn't know this industry either. I wasn't in HR or recruiting. I had no background in this. In fact, I had never even been to the Philippines at this stage, right? I'd never been to that country. So all I had was what the client was telling me, what the market was telling me. So I was just building what they wanted. So, you know, extreme market feedback. And I think that was the thing. I was so deeply focused on what the client needed. Because I didn't know what they needed. So I just had to kind of listen deeply and then just build what it was they wanted.
Yeah.
I also wasn't obsessed with the competitors because I wasn't even in the industry. So I didn't even know who they were. I just wasn't even looking. Deeply listening to the client and building within reason what it is they say they need. And I've done that for 5 years and I've iterated like month on month on month. I'm like, oh, we need to change this or we need to fix that or the client isn't happy with this bit. Let's try and fix it. And I feel that that was what actually built a powerhouse business. It wasn't necessarily me or me knowing anything.
Talk to me about that. The difference between, you said there, within reason. How was it that you were able to figure out what was reasonable to provide and what was not reasonable in terms of what the client was looking for and you producing this product that could scale out?
Yeah, great. Yeah, this is so in the first. So again, nothing's ever linear, right? So I started the business. It went boom. And it grew really quickly in the first 8 months. I think I had 20 staff, like quickly. And I was like, okay. Then it just was imploding. I hated it. I was waking up every day absolutely hating what I was doing, but I was embroiled in it, going, how do I get out of this now?
Yeah.
And the hustle came in. I realized, okay, the problem here is that I have every client is complaining. And they're complaining to me personally on any channel they can find me on, text message, phone, Facebook Messenger, Skype. So I used to wake up every morning to like abuse, basically. All the VAs were complaining about the clients and they weren't trained properly and all of this stuff. So I realized that we had the wrong client. About 70% of the people we had were the wrong client. And we also had the wrong staff. We had about 70% of them were wrong. They were shady, doing the wrong thing, lying, you know, working for other people at the same time, all the stuff that goes on with offshoring and outsourcing, right?
Yeah.
And I was so broken at that point, I thought, should I just close up shop? And then I decided, no, let's just fire 70% of the clients, 70% of the staff, and start again. Mm-hmm. And from that, I realized I need to get clear on who the right client is. So the clients we had, it wasn't their fault, but what they wanted was way out of scope of a VA. Okay, so some of those early clients, I realized what they actually needed was a strategist. They actually needed a business coach. And they were trying to get a $10 an hour VA in the Philippines to run their business for them. And, you know, this comes to the delegation piece. Mm-hmm. They didn't really know how to delegate properly to a person. And what ended up happening was miscommunications, misunderstandings, and of course, blaming the VA for the failure of their own business. Some of their businesses weren't strong enough. They weren't making any money anyway. They possibly had the wrong product to market fit anyway. And they were trying to get a VA to fix it and to help them. I realized that, you know, when I say within reason, it's important to first outline who the client is. And what's the right client who gets, you know, who has a good understanding of what it is that you can do, knows where they're going, they're leading their own business, and then knows how a VA can fit into that. And then the challenges were, you know, they needed the VAs to be trained. They also needed some training themselves on how to work with an offshore team, how to delegate effectively. You know, that's all stuff we can deliver, but we can't make a VA a strategist.
How did you implement those things? Was it a case that you started providing better onboarding or better training for clients as they were coming on board?
Yes, a couple of things. So number one, we got clear on who's the right client. Mm-hmm. What do they need to look and feel like in order for us to, not that they're the right client, but who can we help versus who's too early in the piece that we actually are not right for them yet? They probably need something else first before they come to us. And are we going to help those people? Are we going to build something for them? I decided the answer was no. Yeah. I wanted them when they were a bit further in. Mm-hmm. So that was step one, getting the persona right. And then step two was creating a client onboarding experience and a whole client onboarding process that made sure that the client was ready before we put the VA in. Mm-hmm. So that we don't just go, here's your VA, off you go on your own. So we trained them on stuff like how to create a recurring task list. What does that look, how to first come up with it, then how to create process maps for each of the tasks that you want done, getting clear on what is this VA going to be doing for you, as opposed to what should you be doing yourself, or what do you need an expert for?
Yeah.
How to use project management tools like Asana, how to communicate effectively and have a meeting rhythm, how to run a daily huddle, stuff like that. So that when we put a VA in, they knew how to do this. And that was very key. And then on the other side, I started running training programs for VAs. They didn't just say they knew how to do social media. We actually could control the training and could control, to a certain extent, the outcome and the process maps. So we could say to a client, well, if you don't want to create process maps within these segments, we actually have process maps and we train all the VAs in those process maps for you. Mm-hmm. The business really went boom after that.
Right.
That was a new level. We solved for the second problem that we unearthed at that point.
This podcast is produced by JetBooks, an online bookkeeping service dedicated to giving you real-time financial information at the click of a button. Head to jetbooks.ie/resources to pick up our free step-by-step guide on how to automate your bookkeeping. Were those process maps that you were doing for your clients, I suppose they were the same problems each client was having in order to be able to do them?
I decided to niche. So we were trying, in that first year, we were getting people asking us for bookkeepers and can you get me a graphic designer? And we were just recruiting kind of whoever.
Yeah.
And then we decided, no, let's productize what it is we do to a certain extent, people. Let's niche into a space that we know we can deliver and that we love. And I had learned a massive amount about digital marketing from my Energized Wealth experience. So I felt I was quite strong in that area all of a sudden. Now, when I look back now, I was actually rubbish compared to what I am today. Do you know what I mean? But like, I didn't know, and I, you know, what I did, I didn't know what I didn't know at that point, which was kind of an advantage actually.
Yeah.
We decided that we were only going to do digital marketing. We weren't doing bookkeepers and accountants and all these other things, and that we were only going to do a certain number of platforms. So we were doing Entreport, we were going to support Infusionsoft, some of the other bigger ones we weren't doing. We were doing a certain type of social media, and then we developed trainings in those things and we kind of marketed ourselves in those areas.
Yeah.
That we do this, we don't do anything else. We don't do Facebook ads. You know, we do these bits and pieces and that. And that actually was the other contributing factor to it going boom, because people were like, oh, they're for that, not for this.
Yeah.
So being very clear with the market about what we do and what we don't do.
So you're now providing digital marketing resources offshore, essentially.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
So we're
very
much aligned in this space and we're very clear about the platforms that we support. We've added platforms like HubSpot, Shopify, Klaviyo, you know, very WooCommerce, stuff like that, to get into the e-commerce area now.
Yes.
And we have an entire learning and development department with a head of learning development, and we have our own in-house.
Wow, yeah.
Our house, I guess, basically. And we're bringing more of it next year. It's going to even get better next year.
So bringing it back to you, because you mentioned it there about you felt your strength was in internet marketing. Has the whole process of starting this business shone a light on being a business owner and managing and running a business?
Yes, yeah, very much so. So I discovered that, again, sort of by accident. I mean, you discover lots of things about yourself when you start doing new things and challenging yourself into areas that you've got no experience in. So like I said, I mean, I have no experience in HR or recruiting. But what I discovered was I'm very good, and I thought everyone was good at this, but they're not. I'm very good at systems, processes, and building teams.
Yeah.
No experience in it before. I don't know why I was good at this. I just enjoy it, right? I enjoy mentoring people. I enjoy empowering other people to be amazing because I'm a good delegator, right? Because to be a good delegator, you need to see other people shine and not yourself. You want the others to do it and to be great at it.
Yeah.
So I enjoyed mentoring people and I loved mentoring my Philippines team and teaching them stuff. And I found that that was something I was very good at. The thing I found I was really bad at was recruiting. This was a key factor. And I remember being, you know, hiring a lot of the wrong people. And eventually it was actually my own team that said to me at one stage, Barb, look, we don't think you should interview anymore. And I was like, oh, really? Why? Because like, you want to give everyone a job. Like, you want to give it. And I was listening to everyone's sob story. And in places like the Philippines, you know, you sort of want to give everyone a job, but you can't because not everyone's able for the level that you need. So there was a moment where I realized that I needed to step out of recruiting and I needed to allow my team to step up into that and to trust them that they actually were better at it than me at that point. Yeah. They also were Filipino, so they understood their own culture. Mm-hmm. And honestly, it was scary, but that was the first big department that I stepped out of. Now, I didn't step out of the systemization and the processes and the results, but I stepped out of the day-to-day of it and I let them at it. And we were vastly more successful when I got out of my own way there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We had a lot more success. Yeah. Customer support as well. I realized that was an area I absolutely hated.
Yeah.
No offense to any of our clients. I love all of them, but I'm very, very bad at, I'm hunter, not farmer, right? So this is another thing I learned about myself. I'm naturally hunter. I don't like maintaining. Mm-hmm. So I'm not very good with dealing with people when they have a problem or they don't know how to do something, or I didn't want to get involved in that. So I trained up some really great client success and customer support people who I still was engaging with every day and helping them. I was saying things like, oh, you should probably try this with them or offer that or, you know, whatever. But I wasn't the person dealing with them.
Yes.
And that, again, stopped a lot of the problems because when we had an irate customer, they were able to deal with them on far more professionally than I ever was.
Yes.
Because I had no patience.
Yeah.
So, you know.
And from a technical point of view there on hiring customer service and customer success people, what way were client complaints coming in? Did you get a shared inbox then? And did you have someone in the Philippines looking after it? Or what way did that work?
Yeah, this was a big change. We had to train, and this is a good business tip. Mm-hmm. When you're making a move like that, you know, you can't just change overnight, right? First of all, you have to introduce everyone.
Yeah.
To this new thing that, you know, and pump them up. Oh, we've hired this amazing person. She's going to be doing this role or he's doing that role. Tell the clients. Mm-hmm. Then don't expect them overnight to know that what your new process is, right? Mm-hmm. So they were still emailing me. Some of the original clients still send me an email, right?
Sure.
You know, how do I pay a bonus? And I'm like, oh, you know,
yeah.
I don't mind because there's only a few of them left. But over time, you sort of have to move the new clients to the new system and accept that some of the original clients will still Skype message you or still, you know, but you train them over time. And every time you have an interaction with them, you encourage them that the fastest way to get a response is to email help@ and only have one email address.
Yeah.
We also then built automations such that all of the customer support tickets through Zendesk and everything drop into Asana because we're a big Asana user. So our entire business is run. It's like the motherboard of where everything comes in. So eventually we got more slick at it. You know, we used automation and a lot more process mapping and stuff like that to manage it.
Just changing tack a little bit. You said earlier you kind of started your own business because you wanted to be a mum and you didn't want to stay in a corporate position because you knew that would compromise your time and everything in growing a family. What I'm interested in is how you've managed to grow this successful business, because I understand growing any business, how much time and effort goes into it, dealing with business owners on a daily basis. They see it, you know, the one thing they don't have is time. And you've managed to not only grow a really successful business, and you're also managing to grow a family and you've had two kids in the meantime. How have you done that? And do you have any tips for the listeners on how that works?
Yes, I do. So it's a topic I'm very passionate about speaking about, because, you know, it holds an awful lot of people back in their personal life. And often we create businesses and we think we're creating businesses when actually we're just creating a labyrinth of mess for our personal lives, right? And that's the sad part. The first step for me was that I was very clear on why I was leaving corporate and why I was starting my own business. And that was time freedom, right? It wasn't, I want to make millions of dollars. I mean, all of those things, you know, I want to make whatever. They're all factors in what we do. But the core thing for me and the guiding light was time freedom. Mm-hmm. And then I started getting into business and going, oh, this is not really time freedom. This is kind of, this is like time jail, working 7 days a week, 15 hours a day. And in the early days, it is like that, right? Mm-hmm. But it's the realization that in the early days, you are going to do that, right? Because there's no other way, sort of thing. You've no money. You're trying to scratch around and get something going. And that's just how it is. But then you have to say to yourself, I still have this dream and this commitment that that's what's going to happen, and it's going to happen as fast as possible. And honestly, the number one thing is you have to learn how to delegate. If you don't learn how to delegate, you'll build a business that will tie you up. Yeah. And delegating is not something that people are naturally good at, right? None of us are good at it. We have to commit to it. It is an art, and you have to learn how to do it. But there is a process for it. So making a commitment to mastering that as a skill, then making a commitment to it, no matter how much you hate it, mm-hmm. process mapping and systemization is actually the job of building a business.
Yeah.
Not being a naturopath or being an accountant or whatever it is. The job of building a company is learning how to do systems, processes, teams, mm-hmm. and lead teams to do their jobs, right? Mm-hmm. And become the conductor of the orchestra, essentially. People get confused with the technician part of a business, right? Being the whatever, I'm an accountant, I'm whatever. If you are the person that is delivering the service, that makes it more complicated. I decided that I was not going to be the person delivering the service. I was going to build a company. So that's a different mindset. And therefore, I committed early on to that. And I am a master delegator. And I was also fiercely, fiercely protective of my time.
Yeah.
So when I became a mom, I was like, I will work 4 hours a day, Monday to Friday, and that's it. And whatever I can't do in that time, so you become really fast about working.
Yeah.
And then really, you know, you try and you sort of cut the fat everywhere. You're like, oh, that process is dumb. It takes too long. Let's cut it out. Mm-hmm. I brought in a lot of automation so that I took out the manual labor bit, and I was just efficient with everything, not just my time.
In order to get these processes humming and to get people doing them, you need to hire people. But, you know, was that ever a problem? Not having enough revenue or cash flow at the time to be able to hire the right people to do the job?
Yes, that's a major thing. But I think what I've done, and I still do this today, every major thing that happens in this company, I'm still involved in the initial one. Mm-hmm. I build it because I'm good at processes, right? So I build it, I oversee it, and then I get other people doing it. Mm-hmm. And then I get them to report back to me on success, holes, problems. I think the thing to remember about processes as well is that everyone thinks they're set and forget. Oh, I'll create my operations manual. It'll take me a few months and then I won't look at it and it'll gather dust. Mm-hmm. Processes are living, breathing, dynamic, moving and changing things, right? That you have to work with on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. And it's all about building one and then having people do it and getting feedback and looking for holes and going, we need to fix that. Oh, a client complained about this bit. Maybe we should change that process and just slightly tweak it a bit and see what the results of that are. And it's like this kind of painting a picture where you're just putting a dot there and fixing this bit, and it's like it's like a work of art. Mm-hmm. The key thing for anyone who's starting out, the number one position you need in the early stages when it's just you is a really good general all-rounder VA. And you need someone who can cut across, you know, helping you with some admin, putting together a PDF, putting out some social media content, maybe repurposing a podcast for you into social media stuff, mm-hmm. and can cut across lots of areas. And then you grow from there. You know, if you have a great VA that can do all the doing, well, then maybe you can just afford a digital strategist 2 hours a month to develop the strategy that the VA and you can then go and work on. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like people try and hire, you know, consultants for... So that's a high-low strategy. That's what that's called. Mm-hmm. It's using your budget effectively and thinking strategically.
So using what you have to build out what you need, essentially.
Yeah. Just, you know, and not using the whole, I don't have enough money yet, I can't hire anyone. Yes, you can. You just got to be clever about it.
Mm-hmm. Including your corporate career and everything within this, what's the best bit of advice you might have received over the years?
Sadly, there isn't one, right?
Yeah.
But what I've come up with myself, honestly, and what I've what I've done, I mean, I've been a bit of a, I'm not a rebel, right? I'm not a rebel, but I do tend to do whatever I want to do, right? I'm a bit hot-headed in that way.
Yeah.
So I was sharing with you that in the early days when I first went to Australia, I was starting out my career at Davy Stockbrokers, and one of the heads there, when I went to sort of say I'm leaving, told me I was making the biggest mistake of my career, and was very, very supportive in it, was trying to encourage me not to do this, and was mm-hmm. like, you know, you're going to go on to have an amazing career here. And I remember saying, I appreciate your advice, but I don't agree with you.
Yeah,
I'm going to go and do it anyway. So over the years, I've been very, very clear on what I want and where I'm going. And I'm quite, I am quite the hustler in that I'm like, this is going to happen, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to find the way. Mm-hmm. And I would encourage other people to just think a bit more doggedly that way and go, this is what I want and I'm going to go after it and I'm going to win. No one's going to tell me I can't. Until such time, and you will have failures, right? You'll have mm-hmm. massive failures. But it's that sort of being able to have a failure and then go, well, maybe I'll look over here. And maybe if I open this door, what's behind there? You know, be inquisitive about the direct, you know, you want to know where you're going, but you don't know the direction. You don't know the path. I mean, I ended up in a business in the Philippines, right? I mean, who knew that was going to happen? but I wanted to build a scalable company that would have impact globally. And that's what I ended up doing, but I didn't know it was going to be through this business.
Did you have any outside help throughout this? Have you had any mentors? Because you see, just from listening to there, you seem like someone who really knows what they want and just goes after it and might not really defer to anyone else. How true is that of an assumption?
Yes, that's true, actually. I find it difficult to... I've had a number of key people enter my life at certain points mm-hmm. that were quite pivotal. So look, I have a podcast, shameless plug for my own podcast, The Virtual Success Show, where I talk about how to delegate. Like, we're talking about this stuff. Person I met who I joined a coaching program, a really cheap one, to be honest, like something it was called Strategic Mastermind or something years mm-hmm. ago. And that was during the Energized Wealth days. And mm-hmm. a guy called Matt Malouf was the coach in that particular program. Yeah. And I remember telling him that I was going to pivot into this new business. And he was like, are you sure? What? Like, your vision is this, you know? And I was like, no, I think this is hot. People want this. So he supported me in the decision and was like, yeah, let's go for it and see what happens. And then we went on to produce the podcast together and we became friends. And interestingly, I've just brought him on. He's now our virtual CFO. So he's always been involved. Yeah, he's taking on a massive part now in role in this particular company. So Matt Malouf is his name. I co-host the podcast with him and he's a business coach and a CFO today. That's what he does.
Listen, you've started the family. You have the successful business. You've recently moved to France. Maybe talk about a little bit about that.
You know, just finishing on the family thing, I thought I should mention this. People say to me, how did you do this? And the delegation piece, how I sort of demonstrate how important it is to master this and drive this point home mm-hmm. is I have a 5.5-year-old business. Mm-hmm. I have a 4-year-old daughter and I have a 1-year-old son. Mm-hmm. And I am very much an active mother in that I have half my time with them. I have a nanny to help, but I don't have her all the time. Mm-hmm. So yes. So just on that point, I have been either pregnant or with newborns and having children and managed to enjoy that.
Yeah.
There have been moments of feeling, oh my God, what have I done?
Yeah.
But you always get those moments. But doing that. And then of course, in starting my own company, I was very clear that I wanted to have children. I wanted mm-hmm. to be a mother, but also I did not want to be tied to any location.
Yeah.
Not because I want to be a nomad. It wasn't about that. Mm-hmm. For me, it was I was living in Australia and I needed to have the out to come back to Europe to be closer to my family.
Yeah.
So that was very important to me that this business was portable. And although the business is not portable because it's in the Philippines and everyone is there, I built it remotely. So it doesn't actually matter where I am. Mm-hmm. So I was able to realize another dream of my husband and I had this dream 10 years ago that we would love to come and live in the French Alps. And we realized that dream this year. We moved here in January, just in time for COVID, for the lockdown. Pretty cool place to lock down. But and we're living here now. So after 17 years in Australia.
And why the Philippines? Tell me a bit more about the benefits of hiring staff and building a business in the Philippines.
I didn't in the early days, pick the Philippines. Mm-hmm. But the business naturally grew there because I had a VA there, and the early employees were a few of her mates. You know, that was kind of how we started it.
Yeah.
Since then, have realized that I got lucky in the choice of the Philippines because mm-hmm. it is one of the, I would say in Asia, it's the only location I would go to mm-hmm. for VAs and for staffing. Few reasons. Number one, the English level is, I can't fathom it. Like yeah. they speak English mm-hmm. like a native. I mean, I've asked them this and they say, Barb, because we speak English to each other. Like their English is a very ingrained part of the culture. Not everyone speaks the same level though. I mean, mm-hmm. in our recruiting, you know, 80% of people will fail because of English, but the 20% that pass the English test are fluent English, like native English speakers. It's incredible. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they even use words that shock me that I don't even know what they mean. And they're like quite advanced English words. I'm like, yeah. Oh, wow, that's a pretty big word.
Yes, yeah.
I wouldn't use. So English is fabulous. Their education system is very strong. So they mm-hmm. have a good education system. You know, lots of them have third level degrees and, you know, education is an ingrained part of their culture.
Yeah.
And the third reason, they are the closest, in my opinion, to the Western culture that you're going to get in Asia. They're mm-hmm. quite Americanized. They get on really well with Western people. A lot of them yeah. are my friends. You know, mm-hmm. you can have a laugh with them.
Yeah.
And for those reasons, I think the Philippines is a great country. Fabulous country to visit as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, it really is incredible. So we have a team in the Philippines too. And what I've just found is just the level of happiness. You know, I'll get on a call, you know, sometimes business might be getting you down. You might have had some tough feedback or something from a client or someone, but they're very good at cheering me up, I found, which is, you know, and that adds to it. I think, you know, that makes a difference hugely when you're, you know, not to worry about the small things.
I'll be honest with you, in some of my darkest moments, and you have very dark moments when you run your own company, doesn't matter if it's, mm-hmm. even if it's successful, you have very dark days. Mm-hmm. And in my darkest moments, the people who have lifted me up are my team in the Philippines. Hands down.
Yeah.
They're the ones that have, you know, reminded me of why I do it and reminded me of how great it actually is and all the great things I've done so far with this whole thing. And
yeah. So talk to me about the future of virtual assistants, remote work, having just been through the COVID lockdown and everything else and still going through it in a lot of ways. Do you think that's accelerated the way people are thinking about this now?
It's been a very interesting experience because obviously in the first week or two of the, you know, the COVID experience, I mean, we had clients, cancellations came mm-hmm. like thick and fast. And I was like, ooh, okay, what are we going to do here?
Yeah.
And my only goal at that point in those early days was all of our people are full-time employees on full salaries and benefits in the Philippines of our Philippines company. So I went on to build a Philippine company and legitimize the whole thing. Mm-hmm. That's a whole other story. But so they are all that. So it's not that simple just to let, like I can't just fire people, you know, just because the client left. So, but my goal was, this is probably my hot-headedness again and my drive to win. I was like, my goal is that we will retain every member of staff. Mm-hmm. So we did have to put six on floating, which is like being stood down or furloughed, like where we put them on a floating status for a while. There were only six and they didn't have clients anyway at the time. They were just out of training and they just had no real position yet. Mm-hmm. But what interestingly happened was that in the following couple of weeks after the cancellations, those same clients came back going, I've just realized I can't let the VA go. Because of all this work to do to try to get my business online, be more online. And the online thing absolutely exploded. Yeah. And before we knew it, we were flooded with demand. But the problem was we couldn't hire because COVID had shut the whole of the Philippines down into very draconian lockdowns.
Yeah.
So people couldn't actually leave their suburb to come and interview. Mm-hmm. And then we had to move them all home. So we had like equipment challenges and some people had no computers and no internet at home and mm-hmm. we had to kind of close for a couple of months there to deal with operational only stuff and try to stay afloat.
Yeah.
You know, while giving clients discounts and helping clients to stay afloat as well and mm-hmm. to keep the staff.
Yeah.
So the future now though, not only has digital exploded, so that's mm-hmm. been great for us because we're in a great space. I mean, how lucky is that?
Yeah.
But because everyone's now working from home, people who had offices and never would have thought about offshoring before, mm. are realizing, well, does it matter if my person is down the street at home or in the Philippines at home? Now we're remote and people are learning how to run remote teams. Mm-hmm. And they're investing energy in learning this and educating themselves about how to run a remote business. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've got loads of experience doing this because I built a remote business.
Yeah.
But now it doesn't matter because they're learning how to manage and they're getting more interested in offshore teams. The bottom line calls for it as well because, you know, we're all bleeding money. So absolutely. An offshore team makes so much sense now.
So you're remote, obviously, but it's not a distributed team with people all around the Philippines. Is that correct? They're
Look, I started the business that way. We had mm-hmm. people all over the place and we got to about 60 staff. Mm-hmm. Well, they were contract. It was all weird. It was all subcontractors and flimsy contracts everywhere. It was kind of messy.
Yeah.
And I realized it started to implode after a few years. And I just thought, no, I need to legitimize this whole thing. So we mm-hmm. I launched a Philippine company. I got office space and went to Cebu down south, which is a beautiful location.
Yeah.
And we were office based and that was all going beautifully. And we grew really fast. We put on like 100 staff there in the space of about a year and a half. And then COVID hit and here we are. Like we had to send them all home again.
Yeah.
So now we're actually a remote team, but we're all distributed mainly around Cebu with some mm-hmm. people in Manila. Yeah.
How's that been managing that transition and then managing the ongoing work?
Look, on the surface, it's been fine. People mm-hmm. people have, you know, been good and like, you know, everyone's doing a great job. And you know, we've had some internet challenges. We've had some people have productivity challenges, but we've dealt with it. And everyone, the main thing, I think, which is kind of sad, is that we had invested a lot of money and time and energy in building a culture that was great. Mm-hmm. People loved it, you know?
Yeah.
It's sort of like what the whole house has been burned down. And, mm-hmm. and we're trying to redesign the culture for a remote thing now. And mm-hmm. we found some of our staff have said, you know, I miss the office. I miss my friends. A lot of our staff are quite young still. They're in their 20s.
Yeah.
They don't want to work from home.
Mm-hmm.
They loved mm-hmm. the coffees. And we used to have like birthday parties in the office and coffee breaks and send pizza in and all that stuff. And there's none of that anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, it's a challenge. Yeah, it's kind of sad in some ways, but we're like everyone all over the world, we're just rebuilding. And
do you think you'll go back to the office model where everyone's together?
Look, I think now I'm starting to think about the model of the future, and I really feel the model of the future is a hybrid model
mm-hmm.
where my goal is to have I want to have like almost like a co-working space, but it's just ours.
Yeah.
All branded, beautiful, like cool breakout areas and all the stuff we couldn't really do if everyone's in the office because you need a seat for everyone.
Yes.
Where I sort of envisage people coming in a few days a week, or some people who want to work at the office can work there all the time. Others who don't just work at home. But I do think we need to have them coming in a few days a week for a sense of community and team building and trainings and stuff like that. So I think a hybrid model is the model of the future.
So Barbara, where can people find you online? Do you want people to find you online? I know you said you had a podcast there. Where can people find out more about you?
The first best place to go is our website, which is thevirtualhub.com.
Mm-hmm.
Over there, under the content section, we actually have a wealth of content on our site, all designed to help people to think about delegation and offshore teams more effectively, more successfully.
Yeah.
So the podcast there, there's a masterclass on our site, which I've done, which helps people to figure out how to get set up for this properly, mm-hmm. and people find that very useful. If you want to follow me personally, I think the best place is over on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
Although I will be honest with you, there is stuff posting. Mm-hmm. It is my content, but I'm not the one doing it.
Sure.
So I'm not very active. I'm not very active on social media, actually, on a personal level.
Yeah.
And mainly because my focus is being a mom and running the company and building the company. Mm-hmm. But I'm very much the person in the background in the operations. I'm like the COO, really.
Yeah.
Pulling all the strings, building the whole thing and making sure that people who do come and join us and get VAs through us, you can be damn sure that I'm the one in the background making sure it's successful for you. So yeah, thevirtualhub.com is the best place to go.
Barbara, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate you taking time out of your busy business life, your busy family life to talk to us today. And I hope to talk again soon.
Thanks so much for having me, Connor.
This podcast is produced by JetBooks, an online bookkeeping service dedicated to giving you real-time financial information at the click of a button. Our team of qualified accountants leverage the power of cloud technology to automate your manual processes and cut the cost of your finance function in half. Head to jetbooks.ie/resources to pick up our free step-by-step guide on how to automate your bookkeeping. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and leave a 5-star review. It really helps others to find the show. I'm your host, Connor Carney. Thanks for listening.